afternoon and welcome to the Rundown from WUFT News, exploring our community from top to bottom. I'm Dana Hill, and today for Kristen Moorhead. Well, there are new concerns in Gainesville about disposable vapes entering the waste system. Research reveals disposable vapes are often thrown out casually while people remain unaware of the hidden danger that could lie in their trash cans. If they're crushed during the disposal process, vapes could cause major issues. WUFT reporter Eva Garcia has been looking into the precautions that Alachua County hazardous waste officials are taking. I spoke with her earlier about it. Eva, let's start with the basics. What exactly makes these devices so difficult to dispose of?
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. Vape devices are actually made up of lithium batteries, nicotine, and plastics, which is just a complete nightmare if it's just put into the regular garbage can. That is because these regular garbage trucks have compactors, which if they compact these lithium batteries, they can essentially just go into flames. Also, nicotine on its own is hazardous waste, and hazardous waste is required to be separated from regular trash so that it can be disposed of safely. I spoke to Alachua County Hazardous Waste Coordinator Joshua Prouty, and this is what he told me.
Lithium will react with water and instantly catch on fire. And since these are so small and it's inside such a large truck, it's more of like a delayed burn. They may not even know they're on fire until they come here to the transfer station and empty the trash.
Well, how often are people throwing out these vapes?
So actually in America, people are throwing out around 5 million vapes every single week. Majority of these vapes are just going into your regular trash can and then straight to the landfills that cannot handle these materials at all. And then a small percentage of them are being recycled. Actually, either of these ways are not the way to get rid of these vapes. And these vapes should actually just be delivered straight to a hazardous waste center to be properly disposed of.
Well, so what do retailers have to say about this? Are they educating their consumers?
So I actually spoke to a local vape shop owner, Dan Tong, and he told me that figuring out what to do with these devices can get a little bit blurry. This comes all down to the manufacturing of them. These are very compact devices. The vape juice, the nicotine, the batteries, they're all very compact inside of a shell of plastic, which is what makes it very hard to dispose of because you do have to get rid of these parts one by one. And then also these shops need to go through an approval process that will allow them to be approved by a licensed hazardous waste transporter in order for them to be able to handle this type of material. I spoke to him. He's not a fan of the waste that is created from these vapes, and this is what he told me.
But the issue we, the rest of us, have with that mentality is it just ends up wrecking the industry for the rest of us. You know, if the level of waste we're producing continues at this rate, something's going to have to be done.
Yeah, it sounds like he's concerned about potential regulations in the future. Well, what can consumers do to make sure they're being as sustainable as possible when getting rid of their vapes?
Yeah, so local officials urge the vaping community to practice proper disposal. This would be to collect all of their used vapes and go ahead and deliver them to a local hazardous waste disposal. And then these devices will be properly dismantled and then disposed of to avoid starting these fires.
Well, WUFT's Eva Garcia, thanks so much for looking into this, and thanks for your time today.
Thank you for having me.
That was WUFT's Eva Garcia talking about the dangers of throwing out disposable vapes in the trash can. Well, do you have a story idea for The Rundown? We want to hear from you. Email us at therundown@wuft.org or tap the Talk to Us button on the WUFT mobile app. And if you want to listen to previous episodes, visit wuft.org/therundown or find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or Amazon. But first, Florida has a lot of stories to tell. Do you know our community's history? It's time for a trivia question. Marion County is known as the horse capital of the world. Approximately how many horses and ponies call this county home? Stay tuned to the end of the show for the answer. Well, this is The Rundown from WUFT News, exploring our community from top to bottom. I'm Dana Hill, in for Kristen Moorhead. Coming up on the show, Kristen Moorhead will speak with gardening experts about planting and harvesting fall veggies for a new recurring segment called Dig In. That's coming up after a short break. This is The Rundown. I'm Dana Hill in for Kristen Moorhead. Well, there aren't many movies that call for audience participation, but that's what happens with the Rocky Horror Picture Show. It debuted back in 1975, but last year, WUFT's Sophia Zahran told us about the showing of the film at the Woolley in Gainesville, and we thought it would be a great time to share how Rocky Horror is still embraced 50 years later.
Before we begin, let's set the stage. The Rocky Horror Picture Show is a movie about a young, innocent couple, Brad and Janet. They get caught in a storm and eventually find themselves in the whirlwind of the mad alien scientist, Dr. Frankenfurter. The movie goes through their scandalous antics until, well, I'm not going to ruin it for you. For the past 11 years in Gainesville, the tradition of walking the show lives on. Most of the time, actors reenact the movie as it plays behind them. It's called shadow casting. People have been reenacting this movie since its first midnight airing in 1977. Here in Gainesville, the group known as the Best Little Rocky Horror in Florida has performed it for 11 years. This summer, they debuted at their new venue, the Woolley, in downtown. Zanna Prentice has played over five characters in the show. Today, she's the director.
I just think it's a very accessible show. I think the camp makes it accessible. It's like, yeah, this is going to challenge you. Like, all of a sudden, you've got people, like, fully, like, in lingerie, like, people who initially in the show, you're like, okay, those are regular people, and then they're immediately undressed in front of you.
Prentice says the environment is accessible and welcoming. The movie talks about gender, sexuality, and overall expression. And yeah, I'm going to be honest, this is an 18-plus experience. Garrett Pogue is the show's choreographer and has been part of the cast since they were 16.
My mom used to go see Rocky Horror at midnight here in Gainesville, too, at the Florida Theater. And then when I told her that I was going to go see it, but not only just see it, I was going to be in it, she was taken aback, but she was also proud in like a rite of passage kind of way.
They're impressed with what the show has done for them and the impact it's left on others.
I'll come visit her. That's awesome.
As we walk along the hallway at the Woolley, Garrett Pogue pauses to speak with a longtime fan, Greg Engelberg.
His name is Greg. He's so kind.
He's seen this group perform every year since it started in 2013. He says he's been watching Rocky Horror shadow cast scenes like this one since the late 80s.
My daughter's 20 now, but I started taking her when she was 18, so, and she loves it. She couldn't come tonight because she's working, but I think I've done my deed and passed it on.
And there's a lot of interaction during the movie. That's not just actors on the stage, but audience members yelling at the screen. For example, they'll chant lips when the movie starts because there's a big pair of red lips singing on the screen. And they'll also yell things that are much, much worse. So I'll remove the corn. Many people who have already seen the movie anticipate certain lines. Zanna Prentice stepped into the role of director after many years on the cast.
I think if there was a mutiny and they decided that they didn't want me, I would gladly step aside. And, you know, it's like, certainly I don't feel like I'm forcing it. I feel like it's a labor of love.
Although she doesn't see herself leaving anytime soon, she seems willing to let the next generation of Rocky Horror actors and directors take the lead when the time is right. Odds are, the tradition will not end with her. For WUFT, I'm Sophia Zahran.
Well, that was WUFT's Sophia Zahran with a look back at how the Rocky Horror Picture Show was presented last year at the Woolley, where it is being shown again this year through November 4th. If you're just joining us, this is The Rundown from WUFT News. I'm Dana Hill. As a reminder, our trivia question this week: Marion County is known as the horse capital of the world. Approximately how many horses and ponies call this county home? The answer is coming up at the end of the show. In a few weeks, Gainesville voters will decide whether to return control of Gainesville Regional Utilities back to the city. How will this affect you? We'd like to know. Send us an email at therundown@wuft.org or go to the menu of the WUFT mobile app and tap Talk to Us. We may feature your voice on the show. Well, if you've been thinking about getting into gardening for a while but just don't know where to start, maybe now is the time to Dig In. That's the title of a new occasional series where host Kristen Moorhead will sit down with experts at the University of Florida's Institute of Food and Agricultural Sciences. Recently, she chatted with Tom Wickman, who's the assistant director of the Florida Friendly Landscaping Program, and Wendy Wilbur, the statewide coordinator for the Master Gardener Volunteer Program. This week, they're talking about planting and harvesting fall vegetables.
Fall is a fantastic time to vegetable garden, and there's a lot of great options out there. There's a number of plants that we can pick from, vegetables, but usually in the fall, we are looking at more of our leafy crops, like your kale, collards, cabbage, things of that nature.
You know, it's a good time for radishes and turnips and beets and, you know, those cool season crops we can plant from really October straight on through February. And, you know, so you can get a lot of successive crops.
Right. Don't forget the roots, because those carrots, they are fantastic. And we can harvest right up to the holidays. So a lot of times people like to plant and have those vegetables ready for their Thanksgiving or their holiday meals. That's kind of cool.
What factors do gardeners in Florida and in our area need to consider when they're planting fall crops?
Well, when we're looking at getting the garden going, you want to make sure, number one, that garden's in the right place. And so you want to make sure that it has enough sunlight. Hopefully it's in an area where you pass by a lot and it's easy for you to maintain, and maybe near a water source. Then you really need to look at starting to think about your soil and beefing up your soil, and getting the garden ready for that fall planting would be getting the pH tested and trying to add as much organic matter as possible.
All of those things are true, absolutely. I love to say that the gardener's shadow is the best fertilizer. So we want to be as close, have that garden sited as close to the home as possible. So as you're walking by, you can scout for nutritional problems, insects problems, and to see what's ready to harvest. So that's really nice. The other thing I like to make sure is that we have plenty of sunshine, so more than 6 hours a day, especially for that fall garden. In the spring garden, we'll talk about more like 8 hours a day. But the fall, it's okay to have between 6 and 8 hours. And I want that garden sited away from competing tree roots. So if you're growing in the ground, it seems that the tree roots come from miles away to come in and sap those nutrients and water from that soil. So close to the house, close to a water source, plenty of sunshine, and away from competing tree roots will get you in a really good space. But there are alternatives. You don't necessarily have to be in ground with your veggie garden. You could use grow boxes, raised beds,
even hanging baskets. These are all good options. And you bring up a point about having enough sunlight that I think is really important. And do realize that our sun does change through the seasons. And during the winter time, that sun is going to dip a little bit more to the south. So what was in a full sun location during the summer may not be in the fall and winter. So, you know, that's something to pay attention to.
Sure. And the days are getting shorter.
Definitely.
You know, because soon it will be getting dark at, 5 o'clock, which is kind of sad for me. And the vegetables get sad too, because they want plenty of sunshine.
During the fall, it's Florida, so we don't necessarily get super cold in the fall. But in the rare occasion that we do get a cold snap or even a frost, what is the best way to protect those fall veggies so that you can continue to harvest them?
Yeah, the first thing you want to make sure is that it really is going to freeze, or we really are going to get a frost. Then I would go out and buy frost blankets. My mom taught me to put sheets or bedspreads over, and I have abandoned that thought because those get wet and they get heavy, and then I have to deal with them later. But your frost cloths that you can purchase at your local garden center are going to be nice and light and give you that protection. And on a really cold night, now where Tom lives, it gets colder than where I live, so he might actually double cloth.
I have on occasion, just on those really cold nights, but for the most part, that frost cloth works really well. Mm-hmm. And it is, as Wendy said, it's lightweight, it's easy to use, it stores well, and it dries quickly. So,
for any kind of frost protection, we want to make sure that the cloth goes all the way down to the ground and gets secured down to the ground, because really what we're doing is trapping the heat from the soil, and it re-radiates up to the plant. So we don't want any gaps or little holes for that cold wind to blow or to blow it over.
That was Kristen Moorhead talking with Tom Wickman from the Florida Friendly Landscaping Program and Wendy Wilbur from the Master Gardener Volunteer Program. They were talking about fall veggies. Well, you're listening to The Rundown on WUFT. I'm Dana Hill. When we come back, we're going to find out about a perfect fall day. Stay tuned. This is The Rundown on WUFT. I'm Dana Hill. The seasons are about more than just the weather changing. They can hold memories, traditions, and nostalgia. Well, we wanted to know more about what makes Floridians so eager for fall. So we sent WUFT's Sadie Johnson and Ava Samak out to talk to students at the University of Florida. They asked this question. Take us through your perfect fall day here in Florida.
My name is Kinsey James. So definitely in the morning, I would get up, go get like a pumpkin chai latte, and then go study, and then hopefully like maybe go on like a walk with my friends, and just like with the cold weather, and like hopefully maybe later on go like get dinner with our like sweaters on and jeans, and just like a fun like little movie night at nighttime and just stuff like that.
My name is Cameron Dasher. So I think my perfect day would start off with like a nice sunrise, nice like partly cloudy sky, pretty a little chilly but nothing too cold, and then you know, when walking around the city, kind of hearing like the palm fronds rustling, I think that's like really addicting for me. And then ideally it would rain in the afternoon, so then you have a warm, humid night. That's kind of what I live for.
My name is Emily Ivory. In the morning, ideally I would be like front porching at my apartment with like a hot coffee, maybe reading a book or listening to like some worship music or something. Afternoon, have to get the assignments done, and if I do, then reading once again. And then at night, honestly watching like Harry Potter or like something with a very fall vibe.
Those responses from UF students about what their perfect fall day in Florida would look like. It was produced by WUFT's Sadie Johnson and Ava Samak. Well, with all this talk about the fall weather and cooler temperatures, WUFT's Krista Jensen wanted to get outside too. She did a little digging and came across the Red House Ranch in Micanopy. This is the time of year when their pumpkin patch is in full bloom, and so she stopped in to visit. She found several families who were also looking forward to enjoying the day.
I'm here today at a farm where there's a bunch of different festivities. There's people surrounded by tiny pumpkins, big pumpkins, orange pumpkins, white pumpkins, and you can pick out your own and buy them.
You find some? That one's pretty, yes.
But there's just one.
That's fine, I can turn it around. I love it.
I want to take this.
Thank you for finding it for me.
This one's so sweet.
Did you say what your name was today?
Lucas Worth.
And how old are you?
9 years old.
Did you pick that pumpkin out for your mom?
This is the one that I picked out for her. This is mine.
Why did you pick that one?
Because it's smooth.
Smooth? And it's so little. Did you want a small one like that?
Yeah.
Do you like pumpkin?
Yeah, it would fit in my bedroom next to my bed.
Is that where you're going to put it?
Yeah.
And then there's a tractor where a wagon is behind it that takes you up to where you can pet cows.
Like the free cow.
I'm Betty Horner. It was wonderful getting to feed them, and their names were on their ears, and we could call their names out. It was good. What was the one, Cindy, that we were looking for? The matriarch. Boomer. Yes, Boomer. Boomer was the favorite.
My name is George Guile.
Who are you with here today?
My wife and kids.
And how many kids do you have?
One four-year-old and 1 6-month-old.
And have you brought them to any fall festivities before?
Yes. Last year I went to, I believe it's called Wilbur Farms up in Williston, but they shut that down last year, so I couldn't take them this year. But we found this one online, and we came to check it out.
And what family memories are you hoping to make today?
Oh, memories? Oh, well, obviously this little one's first memories here on a farm. My daughter, she loves anything fall, especially Halloween, so we're hoping this one lasts, yeah.
Are you taking them down the slide, like on all the activities and stuff?
On everything we can, yeah. Hopefully tire her out.
A full day of doing stuff together.
Exactly, yes.
My name is Katie Davis. So I'm with my daughter, Maddie, and my son, Luke. Hoping just to be able to spend some time and make lifelong memories. The kids, it's actually, we've come here every year. So we've been coming for probably the past, I would say, 6 years now. We are sixth fall coming here. So we just love supporting local family farms and businesses and everything. What do you think our favorite activity is, guys? They love the tractor ride. Do y'all want to say anything? What else do you like to see when you come and visit another farm?
Pick pumpkins.
Pick out pumpkins? Mm-hmm. Yep.
White one.
White one and why?
I do not know.
Is it because you get to paint them?
Yeah.
Cool, different colors. You can add all kinds of colors on there.
Yeah.
Do you carve pumpkins?
Yeah, every year.
Do you usually do the same design or do you pick different ones each
different year? Different ones.
What's your favorite? What are you going to do this year?
Probably like a creepy face or something.
Well, perfect. It was great to talk to you today. And, you know, you picked your mom a really pretty pumpkin, and I really like yours.
Thanks.
That was WUFT's Krista Jensen with that audio postcard from a fall festival at Red House Ranch in Micanopy. You can find out more of Krista Jensen's work, along with a nice visual from this story, at WUFT.org/Krista Jensen. The Rundown is a production of WUFT News out of the University of Florida College of Journalism and Communications. Do you have comments or questions about the show today or ideas for future shows? Go ahead and email us at therundown@wuft.org. Before I forget, our trivia question this week was, Marion County is known as the horse capital of the world. Approximately how many horses and ponies call this county home? The answer is 75,000. That's it for The Rundown. I'm Dana Hill in for Kristen Moorhead. The news is next.